south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, once again, I'm here to report that my January Expat Wisdom Latin American Seminar is fully sold out, so those of you who are still trying to get in, well, you missed the boat this time. So as of now, the seminar link has been removed from the Expat Wisdom website because it's filled and it's a done deal. So if I do have another seminar, I'll let you know. Now in today's show, I'm going to talk a little bit about Latin sociology again, since so many people like to hear about the various different customs and attitudes that the Latin folks have that gringos and expats have a hard time figuring out. Now, like I mentioned before, about 40 to 60% of Latin American families live on about $300 a month. And that's for a family of four, which in the States or anywhere in the first world would be misery. Actually, more than a few steps below abject poverty. However, down here, they get by. And they do it by cutting corners everywhere they can. And one of the most common ways of cutting corners is to use firewood for cooking instead of an electric or propane stove. And most of those poor folks get that wood by scavenging, often on other people's property or government land, where they're not supposed to be. Which means any of you expat wannabes and gonabes who are thinking of coming down here and buying some farmland, which in some cases could be a very good idea, you must remember that if you don't have the thing fenced in, and if you don't occasionally have the place and the perimeters monitored, whether you do it, a guard does it, or a maintenance guy does it, I will guarantee you that sooner or later, the locals will find a way to get in and scavenge some of your wood, your trees, your brush, whatever they can get their hands on. Sounds like a big problem, right? And how do you solve it? Well, one long-term expat I know who's got about 100-something acres, he solved that problem in a very convenient way, though it took him a few years to hit on the solution. And here's what he did. He had a little meeting with the cleaning lady, the maintenance guy, and a couple of his farm workers. And by the way, this guy's growing tomatoes, and he's got a good thing going, believe me. The only thing is, being a gringo, he uses insecticide. Oh well, you can't have everything, right? Anyway, he proposed this deal to his working staff. He told them in a little meeting that he was looking for someone to cut all the dead wood out of his property on a regular basis. And as you might imagine, a guy with 100 acres like that has a lot of little patches of wooded areas along rivers and streams and ravines where he can't plant his tomatoes. And the deal he laid out was that he wanted someone to cut out all the dead wood and just keep those areas thinned out. Now, he wasn't thinking of paying anyone to do that. The pay would be that they get to keep the wood that they cut out. He knew there were truckloads and truckloads of the stuff on his land, so he figured why pay someone? It was a valuable commodity. Surely he could get someone to cut it out. Anyway, at the meeting, when he mentioned he wasn't going to pay anyone to cut the stuff out, one of his farm workers shook his head and said, I don't think so. I don't think anybody's going to do it for nothing. And my gringo friend was a bit discouraged when he heard that. However, get this. Within a week, four men came over to his house, knocked on his door at four separate times, and offered to accept his deal completely without pay. Turns out they wanted that wood because not only could they use it themselves, but they'd have so much left over they'd be able to sell it. Those local guys knew it would be a great business for anyone who could hook up a deal with that gringo. It was an exchange of manpower for free wood. And of course, the gringo farmer knew that. And that wasn't all. There was another part to his plan, but I'll get to that later. And the guy he finally picked for the job turned out to be the brother-in-law of that very farm worker who said the gringo farmer probably couldn't get anyone to do it without paying him and giving him the wood that he cut, too. And from this, we can learn three lessons. Number one, that the guy who wanted to know how much he was going to pay would have surely taken the job on himself if there was money involved. The fact is, he opened his mouth about the money. Since he was working for the gringo already, he had inside information on what was happening on that farm. He knew his gringo boss was having trouble with scavengers coming in and stealing his wood. Not only his dead wood, but nice, big, beautiful live trees, too. The scavengers were indiscriminate about what they'd cut out, as long as they could get away with it. And he knew his gringo boss was a bit desperate to straighten out the situation. That's why he brought up the money. He figured his boss might bite. And the thing is, he and the other workers knew damn well there'd be plenty of people who'd take that job just for the wood alone. It was a valuable commodity. Why do you think scavengers would risk getting caught trespassing on someone's property and stealing the stuff? But if a gringo was stupid enough to pay money, too, well, this farmhand was going to be on the receiving end of that deal. Now, in Latin America, you run into people like that all the time. They're called, in Spanish, aprovechados, which means someone who takes advantage of you. Aprovechado. Now, that doesn't mean the guy's a thief or he's going to rip you off or that he's even a bad guy or untrustworthy in general. That just means he'll take advantage of you if the opportunity arises. And a lot of times, us gringos, being the way we are, we let these aprovechados take a little bit of advantage of us, and we really don't care, because it can be such nickel-and-dime stuff that we're really not bothered that much. For example, last year, expat Eddie's girlfriend had a little car accident, and she had to have her car painted. Now, body men and car painters are so damn cheap down here, at first you just can't believe it when they give you a price. And by the way, no matter how low that first initial price estimate is, you can still knock them down by about another 25 to 50%. Just thought you might want to know that. So anyway, Eddie dropped his girlfriend's car off at the body shop, and it was there for about a week. And the guy did a fantastic job for like $300. However, Eddie's girlfriend happened to remark that when she got the car back, somehow or other, there were 300 kilometers more chalked up on the odometer. And how'd she know that? Because obviously that's something that most women would never pay attention to, the odometer, right? Well, it turns out the car had just exactly turned 30,000 kilometers, which is what caught her eye when she handed the car over to Eddie to get painted. And when she got it back a week later, it was 30,300, which means all that week that body shop guy was using her car as the family vehicle for himself, or maybe for a trip to the beach, or who knows. 300 kilometers in 1 week is a lot of travel, which means this guy was an aprovechado. He was taking advantage of a situation. So the question is, did he take so much advantage of that situation that Eddie should have gone back and reamed him out a bit? Well, he's done body work for Eddie, and he did excellent work on that car for about 20% of what it would have cost him in the States. So Eddie isn't about to bring it up, but his girlfriend will the next time. You better believe it. And you can bet next time she needs paint or body work, she'll call him an aprovechado to his face, which will surely embarrass the crap out of him. And he won't do it again. Not to her, anyway. But if it had just happened to Eddie or another gringo, well, we'd just normally give it a pass. Now, of course, there's a limit as to how much a person can take advantage of you before you get really pissed off. But like one wise old expat guru told me once, he said, in order for someone to be an aprovechado, you have to let him take advantage of you. You have to give him permission somehow. And he was talking from big-time experience because he's had a lot of Latins try to take advantage of him. And most of the time, they got away with it, too. Because remember, being first-world gringos and not knowing the Spanish language too well, oftentimes a local Latin will take advantage of us and we won't know it for some time. And sometimes it'll happen over and over again, until someone, like in the case of Eddie's girlfriend, points it out to you. Which means, in my case, for example, in the first few years that I came down to Latin America and I didn't know the language that well, certain Latins took advantage of me and I didn't even know it. Of course, now I know it, years later, but it sometimes takes a lot of years to figure these things out. If ever. Because, like in the case of Eddie and the paint and bodywork guy, oftentimes we get such unbelievably great deals down here that we overlook some of the small stuff, whereas an outsider, a local Latin outsider, would see that we're being taken advantage of. Unfortunately, most Latins won't butt in when they see that happening. Not that they like seeing you getting taken advantage of, it's just that they just don't like butting into other people's business, especially a gringo's business, because they're a bit intimidated by us in the first place. After all, to them, we come from high-class gringo society. We're supposed to know everything. So I guess in a way it must be funny to see us being taken a little bit by an aprovechado. And again, I want to emphasize the fact that I'm not talking about getting ripped off here. Ripped off meaning you really got taken and you regret it every time you think about it. You know what I'm talking about. We know the difference. Up in the States, we've all had a friend or two or even a relative like that. Somebody you trust, but only so far. A family member, for example, you'd lend $100 to, but never a grand. A friend, you'd do any kind of favor for, except let him drive your car. You know what I mean. And by the way, speaking of this aprovechado thing, every Latin person knows who the aprovechados are in his or her own neighborhood. In fact, I know a Latin lady down here who owns a small hole-in-the-wall hardware store. And she has a couple of kids. And they often mind the store for her when she's out shopping in another part of town. But there's one kid who's about 19 who she doesn't let mind the store. Now, he's not a bad kid, but things go missing when he and his friends are hanging out there. And that's another kind of aprovechado, one that's unfortunately in your own family. Now, you'll find these aprovechados mostly off the tourist trail. You got that? I said off the tourist trail. Those kind of folks will take advantage of everyone, not just gringos, but Latins too. Though, like I said, Latins are much more astute at identifying these guys than we are. Now, it just so happens when you're on the tourist trail, like Cancun, Costa Rica, Panama, and most of Mexico, the locals don't fit the strict definition of an aprovechado. Because aprovechado is too soft a word when you're on the tourist trail. Because when gringos get taken advantage of there, there's nothing small-time or forgivable about it. So the word aprovechado just doesn't fit. When you're a gringo in Panama or Costa Rica, you're not getting taken advantage of. More likely, you're getting ripped off or just plain scammed. But let's get back to that gringo farmer and the deal he's trying to cut, trying to get someone to come on his land and cut out his deadwood. Now, if you recall, one of his own farmhands tried to get him to put a price on it, plus the free wood, knowing full well that any of the local men would come in and cut out that wood for nothing, just for the wood. And secondly, he got his family in on the deal. He got his own brother-in-law the gig. And by the way, my gringo friend who owned the farm told me later that he found out that the same farm worker made a deal with his brother-in-law to get free firewood out of the deal himself. That was his commission for hooking him up with the gig. So that farmhand was taking advantage of his own brother-in-law. He was being an aprovechado. However, the gringo farm owner didn't care about that. He had bigger fish to fry. His whole idea for this deal was to keep invaders from coming in and cutting out the good trees from his property. So he made a specific deal with a little contract for the guy he'd given permission to cut out that wood. In the contract, it stated he, and only he, had permission to cut out the dead wood from the farm, and it would be part of his job to make sure that no one else came in to cut out any additional wood. In other words, all the dead wood was his. He could do whatever he wanted with it. And of course, this guy wholeheartedly agreed to that, since now he had something he never had before, his own business, legal too. And in a matter of a week, he and his two sons could be seen around the farm doing their thing. And this guy, now having the perfect right to all that dead wood, and believe me, there was plenty of it. It was all sellable, so it was cash money to him, and he was not going to let anyone invade the property. So my friend the gringo farmer had his problem solved. The guy and his two sons became guards 24/7, and they were more than happy to do it, and it didn't cost the gringo a dime. And get this, for the first 6 months of that agreement, this guy and his two sons used nothing but machetes to cut through these huge logs. Then suddenly, one day, my gringo friend heard that unmistakable buzz of a chainsaw. Yep, business was booming for these guys, all right. They had enough money to buy a chainsaw. And you should know this, only about 1 in 10,000 Latins who burns wood has a chainsaw. That's an extreme extravagance. Try saying extreme extravagance 10 times in a row. I dare you. Oh, and speaking of wood and wood stoves, 40 to 50% of the families in Latin America do not even have a proper gas or electric stove. Instead, if they're using firewood, of course, they have a kind of a makeshift grill that many of these families install in their kitchens inside the house. And that's why when you pass by a group of poor or middle-class people or get on an elevator with a person like that, they've got that distinctive odor of a campfire around them. Of course, they don't notice it, but we sure do. Just like we noticed in the good old, bad old days when people could still smoke cigarettes in bars and clubs, that when you got home, your parents would notice that your clothes and hair would reek. And the next day after your hangover was gone, you'd notice too. Oh, and speaking of that, there's one word you'll hear a lot down here. It's goma. G-O-M-A. Goma. Sounds kind of like gum. Goma. And that's a common word for hangover. And since, in general, Latin men are such big drinkers, you'll hear that word a lot. Now, it turns out that the World Health Organization, no less, has been churning out some very troubling reports about families, especially families in Latin America, who use wood stoves. Turns out that respiratory illnesses are epidemic in families that use wood stoves. And wood stoves in the house have been linked directly to shorter stature in the general population too. That and poor nutrition. Now, in recent World Health Organization studies, it's been shown that if you take a child from one of these houses that has a wood stove and put him in a normal environment where they don't have those things and feed him or her a varied nutritious diet of 1,500 to 2,000 calories a day, the child will end up 2 to 3 inches taller than siblings still living in that home. So anyway, all you gringos and expats coming down here wondering why the population's so damn short, with indigenous populations living out in the barrios and in the boonies, a few inches shorter than the already short Latino mixed population, if you've been wondering why that's so, well, poor childhood nutrition and wood-burning stoves are the main reasons. And what that means is, short stature in the general population is more environmental than genetic. Now, some of the smarter gringos and expats that I've talked to have posed this question. They ask, if indigenous Latin American people are directly related to native North American tribes, and of course that already was proven years ago by DNA analysis. So yes, Central and South American indigenous tribes are directly related to indigenous North American tribes. You know, the tribes up north in Minnesota, Cleveland, and the guys running those reservation casinos that take advantage of pale faces like you and me. Aprovechalos, right? Anyway, smarter gringos have been known to comment that indigenous North American tribes are much taller than their kissing cousins down in Central and South America. Much taller, by 4, 5, even 6 inches on average. So why is that? Well, it's pretty simple to explain, really. For one thing, Native Americans in the North either live and work in the first world, or live on reservations and are taken care of by the nanny state. Therefore, as children, their nutrition, etc., is monitored and taken care of by Uncle Sam. And not that Uncle Sam's nutritionists know what they're doing by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, look at children's lunches in public schools and hospital menus, right? But they do have their minimum caloric and vitamin standards, so that must help at least some. And of course, Native Americans up north do not cook with wood. In fact, they haven't been doing that for 50 years or more, which is around 2 or 3 generations. So basically, the indigenous tribes of Central and South America have no safety net, no nanny state to look to or depend on for the basics. But then again, most of Latin America doesn't have a safety net either, which actually is a good thing, because as you know, the countries with the biggest safety net and the most intrusive nanny states have the highest, most punitive taxes and the biggest, fattest, most bloated governments in the world, which is why so many gringos and Europeans escaped to Latin America in the first place. But I don't have to tell you that, right? Bottom line, poor, short, indigenous Latins are on their own, they've got no safety net. Except, like I said before, at election time, when the party in power hands out free sacks of rice and beans, ensuring that the most corrupt party will prevail at the polls. But that's another story. But worst of all, they cook with wood inside their houses, and the fire is always smoldering inside, which contributes to shortening their stature and chronic lung problems. All right, enough said about that. Now, sticking with this Latin American sociology theme, one thing you just have to notice when you first get down here to Latin America is that about 25% or more of adolescent Latin boys spend a hell of a lot of time doing strange things to their hair. Now, I'm not talking about hair coloring or mohawks or anything, or even any of that crazy North American hip-hop hair you see on the rap and hip-hop videos. I'm talking about hard, shiny hair that's not necessarily been plastered down, but worked around as swirls on the head, or in points, or cones, or triangles, or whatever else they can think of doing with it. All I can say is that the hair goop manufacturers are just cleaning up down here in Latin America with the young boys. And please don't think any of this relates to the gang thing, although I'm sure gang members have their own hairstyles too. I wouldn't know much about that. But it's just amazing sitting in an outdoor cafe or a cafe internet to see just how many of these boys are trying to make some kind of a fashion statement by troweling on a couple of pounds of hair goop. And the question is, why? Of course, they're trying to make an individual statement, I guess. I mean, we're talking mostly about middle class and poor kids here. Kids that go to public school and kids that ride the bus. Because, from what I've heard, kids who attend private schools that their parents have to pay for won't put up with it, nor will the teachers. Because you don't see that kind of male adolescent obsession with hair with the upper middle class and wealthy kids. So anyway, be prepared to get a good laugh when you first come down. Or maybe you'd better try not to laugh. And I know what you're thinking. Back when you and I were kids, most young boys tried wild and crazy things with their hair if their parents would let them. Back then, the long hair thing was a way to rebel against your parents and all that. But I can tell you this. Back then, a lot of the girls liked guys with long hair. But down here in Latin America, I've asked a few young adolescent girls what they think of those hard, shiny, and sometimes sticky hairdos. And practically every one of them turns up her nose and says, yuck. Most just don't get it either. They're not into that kind of hair. They like nice, soft hair they can run their fingers through. Not that greasy, shiny, manicured stuff. That's just impossible to touch without feeling like you've grabbed a handful of boogers. And no, I didn't make that up. A young Latin girl actually said that to me. And for your edification, the Spanish word for booger is moco, M-O-C-O, moco. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. Or better yet and more sanitary, put it in your smartphone dictionary. Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the hairdos of young Latin adult males. This time we're talking age 20 to maybe 35. Now, what I've noticed is that the wealthier an adult Latin male is, the less goop he puts on his hair. However, with the young Latin white-collar middle class and junior executives who aren't wealthy, but trying to work their way up the ladder, meaning guys who don't ride the bus and actually have cars, which are pretty much junks, but they do run. If you recall, having a car, even a crappy one, puts a guy into a completely different social class down here. The fact being, Latin women are extremely attracted to guys with cars. Or, more precisely, the average Latin girl is extremely attracted to what that car can do for her. It pulls her up a couple of rungs on the ladder, too. Since for a woman, riding a bus is a socially and physically depleting thing. But I digress. I was talking about young, white-collar Latin men who love that shiny-haired, goopy look. Yes, you'll see a lot of hair that seems plastered down, with a lot of shiny goop in it that looks like mocos, too. However, it will not be teased into funny little styles like young, adolescent, middle-class, and lower-class boys do. The ones I was talking about before. You see, it seems to have been the fad down here for the last 4 or 5 years for a good percentage of young adult males in lower management or white-collar positions to use that shiny goop on their noggins liberally, which makes them look similar to those old-time movie stars in those black-and-white movies in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Think Cary Grant, Clark Gable, and George Raft, if you're old enough to remember those guys, or you watch Turner Classic Movies. And now a disclaimer. I really have no idea how young men and adolescent boys up in the States are wearing their hair these days, but I doubt they're slathering it with dippity-doo. But I could be wrong. To me, it sounds like an awful lot of work and a big mess when you have to finally lay your head on the pillow. And I bet that stuff mungs up a lot of shirt collars. Not to mention car headrests. But what do I know? I don't have any kids. And by the way, I thank Buddha every single day that I won that lottery. Enough said about that. Oh, but there's one thing I promised expat Eddie I'd talk about. And by the way, a lot of people send me emails asking me if expat Eddie gets pissed off when I talk about him on the show and his girlfriend, and sometimes the way he and his girlfriend do not come off too well. As for his girlfriend, there's not much to worry about there because she only knows about 50 words of English. So she's never going to tune into this show. But as for Eddie, he's just that kind of guy where everything rolls off his back. That's why I said in a past show that everybody likes Eddie. In fact, he's one of those guys that's instantly likable. We've all met people like that. You know, the life of the party. The guy or gal everyone wants to sit next to at a restaurant or a ball game. Well, a couple of shows ago, when I happened to mention that everybody loves Eddie, he did take issue with that. He phoned me up and brought it to my attention, which he almost never does. He kind of likes the idea of being somewhat famous, but with no face to attach to it. Now, Eddie phoned me up to comment about that remark, simply to remind me that 15 or so years ago, back when he lived in the States, no one could ever say something like, "Everyone likes Eddie." Now, I can't go into any detail on that right now, but to say, why do you think guys like Eddie come down to Latin America in the first place? Like he said, if everybody liked and loved him so much and life was so grand up there, why in the hell would he ever leave? So I'll correct that previous statement I made. Everyone does love Eddie south of the Tropic of Cancer. So go ahead and look that up, and it's not the novel by Henry Miller. Oh, and here's something I forgot to mention last time. For those of you out there who send me emails telling me to get on your Facebook page or wanting to know about my Facebook page, which doesn't exist and for good reason, I'd just like to remind all of you guys and gals that although that social media stuff like LinkedIn and Facebook might seem cool and you might even make some money off it if you know what you're doing, well, there's a company out there called Social Intelligence Group that saves the last 7 years of Facebook pages, all of them, and has them up for sale to anyone who wants them. That's all your Facebook data, including all the photos. And you know who their biggest client is? The U.S. government. Surprise, surprise. And you know who all the rest of their clients are? Human resource departments of large companies. And you know what they use that Facebook data for? To check out what their employees are doing on their spare time. In other words, are they loyal, stable employees deserving a raise or a promotion or not? And do they tell you about that? No. It's a big secret, but not anymore since I just told you about it, right? And this social intelligence company is selling your Facebook page to employers who are interested in hiring you because you sent them your resume. So let me ask you, do you really need that Facebook page? Oh, and knowing that, even if you decide to opt out of Facebook, let's say tomorrow, everything you've done in the past on your site is owned by that company, Social Intelligence. And yes, it remains for sale. So if you got anything on your Facebook page that you're embarrassed about, some photo you wish you hadn't have put up, Nah, of course you wouldn't do anything like that. But I was talking about expat Eddie now, wasn't I? Now, I must tell you, like so many expat Americans down here, Eddie still likes his sports. In fact, it's the only thing I hold against him. Now, he's the kind of guy who can be entertained by any kind of sports. It doesn't matter if there's any kind of sports on TV, and he walks by the set, he'll sit down and take a look at it. It doesn't matter if the announcer is speaking in Chinese or Russian, he'll watch. Now, as you might be aware, the World Cup is being held in Brazil this year, so Eddie has been seriously contemplating going. So he checked with a few online travel agents and travel agents down here in Latin America and discovered there are just no hotels available for under, get this, $500 a night. That's right, even the crappiest little mom-and-pop bed and breakfast, Holiday Inn and Howard Johnson's, where the rooms would be normally $60 or $70 a night, doesn't matter, they gotcha, so it's $500 a night. And even Eddie, who'd just love to go, would never pay prices like that. At least, that's what I thought. Then, a few days ago, he phoned me up and said, Johnny, come on, let's go down. I'm still buying. I said, well, I'll go down with you and hang out by the beach and do some people watching, suck down some daiquiris, check out the nightlife, etc., and I'll go to the opening ceremonies, but I'm not going to check out the other games. He knows I think it's just way too boring. Anyway, I asked him, what about those $500 a night rooms? And he said, Johnny, you see, that's the hitch. Now there's no hotel rooms at all for love or money, even though the games don't start till June. So where are we going to stay, Eddie? And he said, well, we've got two options now, and you probably won't like option one. A big hotel chain's renovating some of the slums, you know, the favelas, and they're rehabbing like 1,600 rooms, and they're going for only $50 a night. And I said, wait a minute, Eddie, have you ever been to the favela in Rio? And he hadn't. I said, every kid on the block down there has got an AK-47. You gotta wear earplugs every night to go to sleep, or the gunshots will keep you awake all night. Are you nuts? Anyway, I asked him about option two, which was, get this, staying in a trailer parked in a big hotel parking lot right outside Ipanema Beach. And apparently, along with that, you get full use of the hotel and all the facilities. Well, that didn't sound too bad, especially since the trailers were brand new. So how much a night for that, Eddie? And he told me, well, that's the hitch. You have to buy the trailer and they'll sell it for you later when you leave. So how much? $20,000, he said. But then he quickly added, for $20,000, you could stay at one of those $500 a night hotels for a little over a month, and if you buy the trailer and sell it later, technically that could pay for the whole trip. And my answer to Eddie? You're nuts.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.